thing, standing there, and she and I both shot it, and the very next thing I heard when it went over,
ready?
It literally fell.
Good morning. I'd like to call this meeting back to order, September 27th, 9 a.m. Would you please call the roll?
I will. Amelon.
Here.
Donato. Sievertson.
Present.
Davies.
Here.
Coos. Skillings. Lynn.
Here.
Larson.
Here.
Priceanka.
Here.
Von Bargen.
Here.
Thank you. Is there anyone on the line that would like to introduce themselves? No response, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. So as you look at your schedule, we're kind of just to have the staff reports today. We can go over those in some detail if we need. Is there anything left over from yesterday that we need to continue to discuss?
We gave the sorry, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
We gave the direction to have the meeting correct in the officially we.
Yeah, and we'll do that. We have the next meeting dates on item 10, and we'll make sure that we
perfect.
Put the
yeah.
October 30th meeting in on that. So that brings us to staff reports. The first one is Director of Engineering and Technical Service report, Robert.
Morning. I want to start with the Swan Lake hydraulic analysis, and I'm going to go into a little background, I think, for Jack to understand. Swan Lake is a Francis machine. It's got about a medium head. It's got about 300 feet of head on it. The lake is at about an elevation of 300 on average, 330, 340 down to 270, 1.5. That lake being as it is and being a Francis unit takes a lot more water flow than Tai. And so it is challenging for it to operate in isochronous mode. And what isochronous means is that it actually, when somebody turns on a light bulb, it reacts right now to pick up that load. When you turn on a motor, it would have to react right now. So since the STI was put in, typically we operate with Tai in isochronous. And the reason being is Tai has such a large head on it, and it's using nozzles, it's able to react to changes in load very well because it's just a lot faster response because you got a lot more pressure. So we've been challenged since 1984, since the installation of Swan Lake, with frequency support, and that is trying to keep, typically we operate at 60 hertz. That's where we need to be, and that means 60 times a second, the voltage on the line is going up and down, positive and negative. So we try and operate at that 60 hertz, but Swan Lake, because of the design of the plant, the penstock, the size of the penstock, and the type of the turbine, has always had a challenge. It's floated around 60 hertz quite a bit. In Ketchikan, and anywhere around the world, you have a load shedding scheme, and you guys will see that where you'll see Mountain Point might trip offline, or you'll see the North Point Higgins might trip offline, but the downtown stays online. That's a load shedding scheme where it tries to dump loads in a certain order to try and keep the core going. And that way, whatever generation you have online is able to recover and pick up that main core load. So Swan Lake, being the design that it is, floats around that 60 hertz. And if you can't keep it tight to that 60 hertz, you'll start reaching those load sheds. And it could be in normal operation, no fault on the line. It could just be a motor, a fish load that came on, and it would dump Mountain Point, for example. So we put new governors in it to try and tighten it up. Initially it had mechanical governors, they went to digital governors, solid state, and now we're in the era of getting fast-acting digital governors. So we installed those 2 years ago, but the challenge was, how tight can we keep it inside that load shedding scheme so it reacts fast enough but doesn't go into an oscillation and act too fast? Because sometimes if you say go react right now, the challenge is these two units sit side by side but they share the same penstock. So if you have one unit increase in speed to try and pick up load, the other unit's going to slow down because you just took horsepower away from it. So you get what's called a local mode bifurcation, and they'll actually they'll start oscillating against each other and not against the disturbance on the grid. We had that challenge even with the new builders. So we wanted to address that, and we went out to for contract to do a hydraulic analysis, because that was our issue. It wasn't an electrical disturbance analysis that we needed. It was hydraulically, what is going on in the penstock? What is going on locally at bifurcating between the two units, and what can we do to fix it? So we hired a company out of Switzerland called Power Vision. Dr. Landry and Dr. Nicolette, they end up modeling our penstock, modeling where the penstock goes from one into two, modeling the turbines that we have, and we also have a tide that affects it as well. So all of that being in a model, they were able to tell us what's happening and what we could do to possibly fix the issue. That was done last board meeting. I reported on that. That model was all done, and I reported that the next phase of that model would be to take what was learned hydraulically and try and implement it electrically into the governors that we have right now. So that's what this phase, the report that I'm going to do on now, is. This is exactly what I reported on in June. The model showed that from a load rejection, we were able to mimic real world with the model and prove that the model was accurate. In September, during our outage, we used the it's called PID gains, proportional integral derivative gains. We used the PID gains that were learned from the model, and we put them into the Swan Lake units, and it was right before we ended up having to use them as isocrates. Typically, like I mentioned, we use TAI, but during the outage, when TAI was out of service, we had to operate on Swan Lake, and Swan Lake needed to be reliable and be able to react to frequency deviations. So we implemented these new PID gains that were designed and developed from the model. And you can see here let's see if I go back here. The results were pretty impressive. We started maintaining a less than a 1% change in frequency deviation. Was actually a 0.07% change in frequency deviations. So we were staying pretty tight, but what we were still seeing was, if you take a look here where these red lines are, we were still seeing kind of big dips in frequency at certain intervals. What we learned from that was it was actually the sister unit, not when she started, but when she shut down, because the way these units shut down is they'll go to speed no load, which means they're just running at normal speed. There's no load on them. And then you give them, they actually shut the gates within like 5 or 6 seconds. So by doing that, you actually change the horsepower in the penstock by 10%. So that other unit that's online, it goes up in speed and then dips in speed trying to catch up. So what we did is we actually changed that 6 seconds to 15 seconds by adjusting the cushion, which means instead of closing right away, it closes over 15 seconds. And we got this down to, you don't even notice when the second unit comes on and off. So it was a success. It took a while to get to where we are today, but we can say that we operated in isochronous for that full week with no issues, no disturbances. And so there would be a third phase to this if we so choose, and that phase would be to go and look at a different type of model for it. I'm not sure if it's necessary. I think I've been working with KBU on ways to have Swan Lake operate the way it is now and yet keep the load shedding scheme, adjust the load shedding scheme accordingly so that it's not so tight during operations when Swan Lake's in isochronous. Loosen up the load shedding scheme slightly, allow Swan Lake to walk around, because that unit, it's just the design of those units. You can't get them any tighter before you start taking away horsepower from the other unit. So I mean, we're done with the hydraulic model. All that data has been implemented, and so now I would say that it was a success, and it's operated successfully, and the results were pretty good. And I'd like to pause right here, and because I think this has been an ongoing topic, not only just for this last year, but since 1984, I see document after document talking about, you know, this thing, first of all, it didn't even meet specs on frequency support when they first designed it. They had to make the rotor in order to help with disturbances. If you have spinning rotation, spinning mass, it's able to, the larger it is, the more frequency deviations it can take. So they increased the size of the rotor. They actually increased the size of the penstock slightly, but they still didn't have a great isochronous machine. So it's been a challenge for a long time, and we've come a long way with technology. And so as we sit today, I'm thinking we're just about as good as it's going to get. We might get another tenth of a percent better, but I don't know if it's going to be worth the effort. And so we're still looking at that. But you guys have any questions on the hydraulic analysis? I know it's been going on for quite a while.
So, yeah, Robert, how does this work in regards to low water conditions? Does it change the ability for us to adapt depending on the head pressure?
It does. So there's two parts of this that were implemented. There is the change in the proportional integral derivative gains, but then there's also an oscillation detection. And so basically what it says is if the unit begins to oscillate, which is okay, it does. You can see that here. TIE does the same. All units do the same. They oscillate. Whenever you turn on a light bulb, it's going to slow down a little bit, and then it's going to give it gas to try and pick up that that load. So it's always going to oscillate. You just don't want to oscillate too much. This oscillation detection that's in the unit right now will detect whether it's oscillating outside of a certain range and then change that PID gain. And so it'll help throughout the whole range of lake levels, including the low lake level. I think the more concern is not necessarily now the low lake level, is what it's going to do at 342. Because now you've got a lot more horsepower. And so if you have too aggressive of a gain, it's got a lot more horsepower to work with, like when you step on the gas. And so it will cause that sister unit to oscillate even more. And that's why we've dampened the PID gains as way we have, and then also added that that oscillation detection.
So I didn't understand. You did say that somehow the tide affects what we're doing at Swan Lake.
So if you think about a 20-foot tide, if the tide water comes up and it's above the turbine, then you've got less head.
Back pressure on that.
Yeah, back pressure. It's straight affecting the head on the lake. So you might have, the lake might be at elevation 300, but you've got a 20-foot tide, so maybe you're at 290 now. Because you're 10 feet above the turbine, okay. So that change in the head really affects the unit.
Yeah, yeah. So I didn't realize it was that much.
And it happens every day.
You know, yeah,
four times a day. So you'll see you'll see difference in efficiencies throughout the day as a function of tide, in system response and reactance of the units, as a function of the system tide. Although nominal for that last part, but as far as efficiencies, you'll see, you know, a tenth or two-tenths of a percent change.
So this allows us to be able to do that with Swan, but our normal operation is that we have TIE pick up the...
Absolutely. The TIE is about half as this, and this is really zoomed in, by the way, so this might look, if you were to zoom out, it just kind of looks like a squiggly line.
Yeah.
But TIE is about half that, so it really only...
Efficiency-wise, that's the best...
We'll go into efficiency here in a little bit.
That's
a really important topic. What we have been able to do with efficiency at Swan to gain actually a lot of megawatt hours out of it. So I'd say pretty happy with where we are. Of course, I'd like to see it operate like TIE, but I mean, I got world experts saying that's just kind of the nature of the beast with what kind of design we have there. Trying to run a grid on a single Francis low head hydro unit is rare and challenging. For example, Kodiak, their frequency is a lot sloppier than ours, twice as much. Mm-hmm. So they have to dial back their load shedding scheme and say, well, we'll live with being kind of all over the road a little bit. They also have wind too that affects them, but so.
So what's that frequency change mean to our customers?
For a customer, not much unless it gets down to a level to where it would affect. But frequency really won't affect your lights. It won't affect your heaters or anything on a normal residential customer. What it could do to a commercial customer is the motor, whatever they're running for a motor, its speed is directly proportional to the frequency. So if you slow, you can, you know, you slow your frequency down, then they'll slow their motors down. Unless they have, there's different types, but it can cause heating, and at a really low frequency over a period of time, it can cause them to get hot and damaged. But we're talking less than a 1%. They won't even notice that.
Either. Okay.
If you had like 5 hertz or something, you know, 10%, 15% change, and it stayed there for a while, the motors weren't designed to run. You would have to buy European motors to try and run in the United States a 50 hertz motor or something. Then you could start seeing effects. But our load shedding scheme is way above that threshold, so you would never see any problems with customers other than your clocks might change the time. So every time you see that clock click, it's based on the frequency, the 60 hertz on the grid. And if we run at 59 hertz, you'll be behind like 5 minutes in a week. And then the next week, you'll be behind 10 minutes. You're like, what is going on with my clock? And it's because the frequency is down 1 hertz.
I mean, all those clocks I've been throwing away was because you had
wrong. You thought it was a clock problem.
Thank you, Rob.
All right. Moving on. Just that. Okay.
I didn't know that about clocks. Did you know
you
that?
You can answer this. The dynamics on that KPU has spinning inertia as well. It's got hydro units.
That's a bad reason.
So the more spinning inertia you have on the grid, the less deviation you have. So, yeah, there is some work to do together. Yeah, absolutely. The Tyee and Swan Lake Governor pressure systems. What you can see here is the crew out there at Swan Lake. This is actually our roving relief, Chris, that we've talked about yesterday. He was here during both outages at Tyee and at Swan Lake. He was a good hand for both. But you see our crew here, they're helping with the wiring, helping with the install, and it gives them ownership in the project. What this project consisted of was these old sight glasses in the back. This is actually a new one now. They didn't have any way to really see the level of the oil for the governors in the SCADA system, and they were getting old. So we put these new sight glasses on with analog output values that we can actually see in SCADA, monitor, alarm on, and just keep good record of how that operates. So that project was completed here in September. We're just waiting on the final drawings. I got one set of them already in. Swan Lake distribution valve controller and manifold. See this picture here. What this has done for us is given us the old manifolds. You had to special order some parts, and some of those parts were long lead time items. So we had this manifold built such that we could have off-the-shelf valves here. And so these things right here are very common. We use them even up at the intake gate. We use those there, so we have lots of spares. And so anytime these common failure items have a problem, we could have them replaced within an hour.
So what does this valve control?
That's actually the governor valve for pouring oil to the wicket gates.
Okay.
To open and close them. And whenever you open and close the wicket gates, you allow more water in, which would increase the speed unless you have 60 hertz. And instead of increasing the speed, it would increase the megawatts. So that was completed there in the September outage at Swan Lake as well. Swan Lake Station Service Switchgear Design Project. This is not very clear. I thought it was clearer than that. This project is underway. Right now, Right now, I had my first over, I call it over the shoulder review, and that's where I have them send me preliminary drawings before a design submittal, so that I can get a good idea of where they're going, and then we don't have to backtrack. Our first 30% submittal is due here, I think tomorrow, on the 30th. So looking forward to that. We've already had a couple site visits out to Swan Lake where they've identified cabinet layout, which is kind of a challenge because all of our conduit, a lot of our conduit is in the floor. So when you take the old gear out and you're going to put new gear, it's gotta fit right. The wires have to be in the right compartment to go to the right breaker. And so there was a lot of measuring done and design done here 3 weeks ago or so. EPS is the contractor that was awarded. So yeah, looking forward to the 30% design coming in, and there'll be 100% design complete in December.
So this is replacing the old breakers and switch gear that we have, because we had to have that one specially built because it was custom built, I guess.
Our station service at Swan Lake is original equipment. One of the breakers is stuck right now. It can operate open and closed, but you can't rack it physically out. And for clearance and safety purposes, you would never work on a piece of gear and rely on a switch to keep you safe. You actually physically rack it out and see an air gap. Then you know there's no way that electricity could pass through that air gap. And so that breaker is stuck. There's other relays in there that do functionality that operate the diesel generators out of Swan Lake. Those are starting to act up. So the whole switch gear is at the end of its useful life, and so we have this project to replace it. When I say station, I want to kind of emphasize on that. Station switch gear or station service, that only includes everything that is required to keep the plant operational. So your all your pumps, your motors, your AC power, even the cam, it's all part of station service. And so all that's backbone. You have to have all that to even operate the generators. So station service is pretty fundamental to the reliability of the plant. Mm-hmm. And it was time to do this replacement.
Okay.
Okay, moving on. It's all original right now.
Yep.
And it's held up really well. Tyee's is all original as well. It's held up really well. They used to build them real strong. But at the age that they're at, you're starting to see problems with breakers operating, not being reliable. And doing a rehab on these is not, you can do retrofitting where you put new breakers in, but those are typically a nightmare because you've got to get everything perfect. It's not in a controlled environment done in a lab designed for this specific purpose that it is intended for. So I've always steered away from retros as much as I possibly can.
What is the brand that you will end up with on this?
We're looking for Eaton. Switchgear. Tyee and Swan Lake Snow Pillow. So this is a CAD model that I did of the conceptual design. These are some aluminum sticks that we have out at Tyee and Swan. They're 4 inches by 6 inches. The design intent, four by six? The intent was to have the platform on top to be approximately 12 feet tall, and that would be the length of these at an angle. And then have an 8 foot tall pole here with the solar panel. There's solar panel, there's a radio that's below it, and then an antenna. All this has to be above the snow level because the snow gets up to what, 18 feet, 20 feet? And so we need to have our electronics and everything above that to be able to measure down at the bottom a snow pillow, which we'll show you here what that looks like. So the guys out at the plants had a competition on Tyee versus Swan on who could build the better snow pillow stand. This one here is an example of Swan Lake's. At the end of the day, I would give them both equal, because they both did really good. But you can see that the stand is pretty strong, and
So is that an equivalent of a participation award? They're both super duper.
They're going to get some stars.
I think that's kind of easy.
So, you know, the question was, what kind of weight is this thing going to bear? Are those enough bracings, they were wondering? I don't know.
So, the pillow itself will have 20 feet of snow on it. So it would be about 6,000 pounds per square feet, mm-hmm. 20 feet of snow. This stand, it only has maybe 100 pounds on
okay.
top. Right, because you have a battery, a solar panel, a small radio, and then the antenna. So it's not that much weight on top. The thing we were trying to do is the wind. So this actually has...
less wind, yeah.
Yep, you can't really see it, but there's eyes that we're going to hook guy wires to as well.
So there's a pillow... down. Robert, sorry, I'm having a little hard time envisioning this. So there's a pillow underneath this that's suspended up off the ground, and it's weighing the snow? Or I don't understand how that pillow thing... It's a weight
basically,
thing?
Basically, yeah, it's just got cell... load cells on it that weighs the snow.
Okay. Don't you have the other picture of it?
You got a picture of it?
Don't.
Calling it a snow pillow is really not the correct terminology, but that's what they used to be, was big bags full of antifreeze, and then the snow would just pressure that, and it would go through a pressure sensor and send you back that equivalent, water equivalent. Now it's just a little electric load cell.
Yeah, so what... Robert was asking me last night, how are you going to prevent it from bridging? And that's a common thing. Basically, if you have let's say I have a load cell, it's basically a bathroom scale with four load cells on it. And it's the size of that, and I set it out there. Well, the snow will get on it and melt a little bit, and it'll start building an ice layer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Pretty soon it'll bridge, and that thing won't measure anything, because you have this cave, if you will, over the top of it. So the way this one was designed, and they're about the same size as the top of that table, there are plates that run. Two going that way, two going this way. So your pillow is 11 feet by 9 feet. That's how big it is. And only the center measures. So the bridging effect, because of the platform being as large as it is reduced quite a bit, and you don't have that bridging over the top of that middle panel. They've had a lot of success rate. This design is a Salmer design, came out of, I think came out of Switzerland. So they do a lot of snow measuring up there. Unique to our area, though, is the remoteness of our plants. Mm-hmm. We have to have this thing up in the middle of the mountains. How are we gonna talk to it? You know, there's no roads to it, you know, that kind of stuff. So we had to design an antenna and a battery system and for it to be self-supported off-grid and still send us our measurements. Swan Lakes is ready to fly up the hill right now, and we're just waiting. Today would have been the day, but we're waiting for another day like this.
The snow pillow isn't underneath that thing. It's at some distance away.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Yeah. I thought it was underneath.
And then it communicates, is that it?
Well, it just communicates.
Yeah, there's a wire that goes between.
Okay.
There's a wire between the snow pillow and that.
I thought it was somehow.
And so basically, just like your bathroom scale, these are called, load cells are basically piezoelectrics. As you deform a metal, it changes its resistivity. And so when weight gets on it, it changes resistivity. You're sending a voltage to it, and it tells you how much current you have. Then you can measure the volume.
Okay.
It'll sit to the side some 10 feet of this, and have a cable that runs up and a strap to it, and so it's off to the side. And then the stand is what has actually got all the smarts and electronics and the radio to send the signal.
So this will allow us to continuously monitor our snow loads so that then we can do predictive analysis on what our spring inflows will be, which will help us manage our current levels on an ongoing rate. Would that be fair?
Absolutely.
And not have to fly it?
Well, it can reduce the number of flights, but we will continue those while we maintain and make sure we have an accurate measurement.
And currently, we do just fly up when we get a chance, or wait till the
spring? So we usually do 1 to 2 snow surveys a year at certain times of the year, and we do them in specific places. We go up, take snow measurements, weigh it, and see what the base is. This will kind of allow us to trend it throughout the year a little bit more consistently, and and just track it closer and have better predictions and just kind of trying to dial in our models, if you will.
And then how, because I know you do the weight of the snow for the water.